It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
What's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson, and special guest Jordan Rodrigue of The Athletic. Jordan, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great. We usually jump in. We usually banter a little bit. We usually do a quick ad read and everything. But you're live from training camp. It's like 4 in the morning probably on West Coast time over there. So we got to jump right into it. Jordan, we're here to talk about the play callers. So tell everybody, what are we talking about here today?
Yes, well, I know that this, you guys as fan base, very football savvy people, very well informed people, large in part thanks to what you guys do and the work you guys do. But if I were to explain this project to somebody walking down the street, and believe me, I have done that, I would say this show, this series, audio documentary at The Athletic, it's about how football happens. For better or for worse, and everything in between, through the voices, minds, and philosophies of some of the brightest minds in the sport, and certainly those who are all interconnected within the same coaching tree, the youngest coaching tree in the league. Our main characters, of course, in this series are Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel, and Matt LaFleur. But the ripple effects from some of the decisions they made and the work they did together at such formative times in their coaching careers interconnect with the paths of so many others that are also featured in the show, inclusive to defensive coaches, Robert Saleh, Brandon Staley, assistant coaches across the league, players. So it's a series about, you know, competition between those coaches, innovation, and basically the decisions that people make at inflection points in their career that shape the arc of the sport and shape what we see in modern football today. Everything from philosophy, scheme, how teams are built, how defenses react to offenses, and certainly how hiring works in the league today.
Yeah, there's some fascinating, like, what-if moments in this. Like, if there wasn't a snowstorm in New England somewhere and the Rams had actually gotten to interview Kyle Shanahan, like, the entire NFC West, the entire balance of power in the league could have shifted completely. I was wondering, did the idea or the sort of story that you were looking to tell change throughout the process of this? Like, you have the concept, you make the pitch, the guys of The Athletic sign off, you're now, you know, constructing all these interviews, you're talking to these people. Did the story change when you started to get in touch with these guys and get all the interviews wrapped up, or did it pretty much stay along the lines of what you wanted to pitch in the first place?
Well, great question. I actually started forming the idea of this story, of telling this story, the earliest sort of drips of it back in 2020, after I watched Sean McVay and Brandon Staley clash at practice. Obviously, Sean McVay was trying to troubleshoot his offense and figure out what his system needed to look like as other teams had caught up to it. And he went out and hired Brandon Staley, who was going to run the exact defense that proved to be a perfect foil for his offense. And the key part of this for Sean McVay was he could troubleshoot against this thing in practice every single day where nobody else could see it, right? So he could run all of these experiments and sort of game theories And so could Brandon Staley, and they could do that at a highly competitive level against each other. But no game tape is getting out to all other 31 teams across the league who are curious and sort of trying to figure out what comes next as well. And so when I watched that in person, that was when I really started understanding how systems clash against each other, and also how people clash against each other, but sometimes for constructive ways. And you always knew the story about Sean McVay and Mike McDaniel and Matt LaFleur and Raheem Morris and Kyle Shanahan in Washington, and some of the like chaotic functional dysfunction that was happening in those coaching rooms there. And when I watched the way specifically that Sean McVay orchestrated those practices against Brandon Staley, I thought to myself, okay, he's done this before. This type of conflict has been in his life before. It's clear to me why he has sought this out. And so I started digging back and talking to people around those guys and talking to different people over the course of the last couple of years, what actually was going on there? What was it actually like in those rooms, to the point where now I'm starting to build this story and try to figure out what's the best medium for it, right? At a certain point, I started thinking, especially after Zach Kiefer did the Andrew Luck podcast at The Athletic, which was incredible. I thought, what better way to tell this story or attempt to tell this type of story than through the voices of the people who actually experience these things? Because it's one thing to read something in print, but to have the story become three-dimensional, to become alive, and in part thanks to our awesome producers, Mike Smeltz and Kent Garrison, I wanted people to feel like they were there, like they really understood that tension, like they really could hear how truly like unhinged some of these people can be, but also, you know, how passionate they are and how competitive they are and how that obsessive, relentless pursuit. You know, this is not a praise podcast. This is not a podcast talking about, you know, how great people are. This is a podcast that shows the true dark side of what it can be if you are singular-minded and obsessive in your pursuit of perfection in a game that wants you to be imperfect at every turn.
One of the things interesting to me, Jordan, too, is I think sometimes we oversimplify, like, this coach worked for that coach who worked for that coach, therefore they're all the same person, they're all the same personality, they all do the same things. But you start to see the differences in how, obviously, there's a, you know, continuity across systems, but they all diverge, right? And they all, because of personalities, or like you say, Sean McVay being obsessed with a defense that was shutting down his offense. But the importance of defense and offense in this whole thing, again, we only focus on the offensive part of it, but each person has a different take for what they stole from a defense. Or I always thought that Sean McVay just hired good defensive coaches, but obviously there were ulterior motives that he had there. What did you learn from the intertwined offense, defense, and, you know, taking a system and understanding the other side of the ball? Because you're a head coach, you have to be good on both sides.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. You started really seeing, and Kyle Shanahan talks about this at length, and so does Raheem Morris, by the way, because Raheem Morris is like, wow, Kyle Shanahan used all this stuff against us later in life. But Kyle Shanahan used to sort of like, I guess there's no other better word for it, he would like lurk in the back of defensive meetings back when he was in Tampa. Yeah. And you got to understand, at that time, he's also logging plays out of the biggest playbook in the NFL at that time, with no internet information sharing. Like, you can't PDF file any of these plays. Like, you can only see it in one place, and that's in when you're sitting in the office and you're looking at it. So he has this exclusive access to this knowledge, which also to me was very, by the way, illustrative of where we're at right now in the league in terms of some of the hiring cycles and practices. He has this unique access to this playbook, and he's taking all of that knowledge and he's starting to lurk in the back of these defensive meetings, you know, that Monty Kiffin, you know, Tampa 2 defense, and he's listening to all of them talk and troubleshoot their defense, and he's starting to understand how to manipulate space. So if he knows where they want to put players against an offense, he's starting to think about plays and how those plays can take advantage or force mathematical leverages and spatial leverages against the spacing specifically that the defense is trying to achieve. And that carries forward not only in his teaching of other young assistants that he had, including Sean McVay, which then a couple years later leads to Sean McVay's hiring of Brandon Staley and a ripple effect across the league of those types of defenses. But also, it's, you could see the way that the two sides of the ball are so deeply intertwined through the entire course of the series, because these coaches are bringing in defensive coordinators, Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh, who are they're making it okay to fight with each other over these ideas and to truly test one another. So you see it through 2017 into 2019 and 2020, how the development of the wide nine and Robert Saleh actually playing more quarters than he ever had out of that foundation he had of that Seattle like cover three system. Now you're starting to see his coverage concepts mix up. You're starting to see that wide nine that's built specifically to not only rush the passer really well and with multiplicity, but also cut off the outside zone. And then you start seeing Kyle Shanahan's run game change, more counter, more power, more inside stuff with Mike McDaniel, because he's going against the wide nine in practice every day. And he's seeing how to manipulate space differently against these different looks that he's getting. So that's what we love about the sport, right? That's the coolest stuff ever, is seeing how things react to each other and change. And certainly, of course, the players bringing it to life has been so impactful for some of these coaches. And that's where you get into the complication of being a play caller and knowing you need to empower your players to help you find those ideas on offense and defense. But also that sense of like control that is explored throughout the series of all these guys, they crave it, they need it. They need to be in command of what they're doing, whether it's on offense or on defense. They're all that type of personality. And yet you can't be, right? Because you have to let go. You have to cede control to your players at certain points, and you have to cede control to your assistant coaches, specifically on the other side of the ball, because that's the only way that you'll find answers.
There were a few things in this that I thought made me think about sort of an established concept or thing that happened already in a totally different way. One of them was we brought up already. We kind of always assumed that Sean McVay just did a smart thing when they hired him as this youngest head coach to go get an established, smart, defensive-minded guy and just leave him to the defense. Let's get somebody who knows what they're doing and I'll step away and now I have this guy. But actually, it sounds like it was much more, I'm going to go get a really smart defensive mind, because going against that every single day will help this side of the ball regardless of what it does to the other side, and then kind of redid it again with Brandon Staley. But the other thing I think that was interesting is we sort of view it as eventually Sean McVay just decided that Jared Goff wasn't good enough, couldn't hit the heights needed to execute the offense the way it needed to be executed to take this team to winning a Super Bowl. And Matthew Stafford was the guy that ended up being the player that could. But the way it's sort of described or articulated with those two things being connected, did Sean McVay actually break Jared Goff by going to Brandon Staley as his defensive coordinator, by deliberately pitting his offense against the most difficult thing in the league for it to go up against? It sort of broke Jared Goff's confidence and broke him down, as opposed to, building up a young quarterback who still needed to develop.
Well, I definitely wouldn't put any words in Jared Goff's mouth. I think he's doing fabulously, obviously, in Detroit. And that time, to me, instead of, I think part of this is we always want there to be like a hero and a villain of anything, any split that happens in any team. And this really wasn't the case. It was more a case of pacing, right? Because Sean McVay's pace after 2018, losing to Bill Belichick and the Patriots, when they borrowed concepts from that same defense that Sean McVay ended up installing in-house in Los Angeles 2 years later, Sean McVay's pace changed. He went from this coach who was basically just doing stuff because it felt right and it was leading to a lot of wins, and they were sort of starting to sprint at a pace that was frenetic, until they hit a brick wall, almost literally. And then the pacing changed, because at that time, when you're working with Jared Goff, you're building together, you're working on things that help your quarterback become a function of the offense and vice versa. But once you realize that you're at the level that it takes to contend for Super Bowls, but you need to make sure that you're pushing these pieces all together, that can also match your pace. The matching and pace became different between Jared, who I think we forget a lot of times was still a developing quarterback, very young quarterback, even though we forget it because he went to the Super Bowl so early in his career, was still developing. And the pace of that development changed and dramatically juxtaposed to the pace of the head coach, who, in his own words, had started this maniacal pursuit toward getting back to the Super Bowl and winning it after that loss that was so embarrassing for him. And a lot of times when we see teams move on from players, players either outgrow teams or teams outgrow players, it's a question of pace, not necessarily personal feelings or frustration. And I think my opinion is that seeing that pace, being reminded of that pace change and that juxtaposition over and over and over again in those practices, because every day was about getting presented the toughest look you could possibly imagine. Andrew Whitworth speaks really well in the series about what that did for the entire offense in terms of shaking its confidence a little bit. Oh, maybe we're not as good as we thought we were. Maybe we don't have all the answers. Maybe we have to start thinking differently about certain things. Well, that's inclusive to the quarterback. And so when those things start to happen over and over and over again in practice, and then you start strong in the season, but then you start losing games and practices are getting even worse, you know, you're starting to really recognize, if I, as a head coach, because Sean McVay is the one who, you know, pounded the table for Matthew Stafford, you know, if I'm the head coach and I need to stay at this pace or risk losing it altogether, I need to make a change. And also on the other side, I think Jared Goff did need to go to a place where his development would continue in a natural arc and not sort of hit this crazy vertical shot the way that Sean McVay had expected him to do so.
There's so many more voices in this podcast than, you know, just the ones that get top billing, right? Those guys on the poster for the thing. Was there anybody in there that you found sort of most compelling of all the different personalities? Because all these guys are really interesting people, but there was one that jumped out to me. I'm curious if any jumped out to you.
Well, I will say, shout out to Robert Saleh, who did try to completely steal the show from the offensive guys with the quality and caliber of his interview and some of the anecdotes that he told that people, I think, will really enjoy, specifically in episodes 1 and 3. Mike McDaniel stood out to me among the core characters because of his candidness. I think they were all extremely candid, what I think people will enjoy is hearing, you know, Kyle Shanahan and Matt LaFleur especially talk about football in a way that they don't often talk about it at the podiums that they're on, and be very, you know, with Kyle, like sometimes his obsessiveness about the sport and the way that he thinks about it, it bleeds through in his voice and you can really hear that. But Mike McDaniel, I thought, was extremely candid, not just about the way he thinks about, you know, the dynamics between all of them, but also the way he thinks about football, the way he comes up with plays, how he thinks about calling plays. He has this dialogue out loud as he troubleshoots things with himself, but the gift was that he let it be heard. You know, he wasn't sort of talking in his own mind. He was talking through these ideas and these theories that he had out loud into a microphone. And to me, that really struck me as, you know, I don't know Mike McDaniel very well before this, right? Because I'm on the other side of the country. You know, I know him through sort of stories and people around him and Kyle Shanahan. And I think he really emerges as a very key personality within this series as someone who does epitomize, you know, being a little bit different in terms of what we consider a historic traditional football coach. All these guys are in different ways, but Mike McDaniel, the way he talks and the way that he expresses his ideas certainly struck out to me for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because McDaniel was the one that jumped out to me as well. What I found really interesting about McDaniel is that he was open about the way his mind was working in an interpersonal level in a way that some of these other guys didn't necessarily touch on. Not because they weren't thinking it necessarily, just because they didn't articulate that. But, you know, McDaniel would talk about how he deliberately went and learned the run game because that would kind of get him in favor with Kyle Shanahan. Whereas, you know, Shanahan's talking with LaFleur and McVay and it's all pass game all the time. And he sort of calculated that if he's going to be heard in this, you know, like almost like a kind of mama bird with all the chicks, you know, if he was going to find the worm, he was going to have to make himself unique. And being able to like articulate those kinds of things, or not being able to, but being willing to, I found pretty interesting with him in this series.
Yeah, I think one of the most telling anecdotes that tells you so much about what you need to know about the dynamic between coaches, not just these coaches, but most, if not all coaches, was Mike McDaniel's story about how you have to understand the foundation of the relationship between all of these guys was Kyle Shanahan was the boss and he was training all of these guys who wanted to know what he knows. And they say this in their own words. And at the same time, they were all competing with each other every single day, very vocally, to get calls onto Kyle's call sheet for games. And that would mean that you're making progress. That is a tangible in a building where Mike Shanahan is never letting you know where you stand by design. Having a tangible call on the call sheet or something that you do being used in games is the only way that you can see that you're making progress as a coach toward this dream and this goal of yours to be a head coach. And so all of that manifests on Kyle Shanahan's call sheet. And so Mike McDaniel's most telling anecdote of the dynamic between what that must have been like was he starts creating these plays with Chris Foerster at the time, the offensive line coach, and they're talking about the run game. And he decides that he's going to let Kyle Shanahan, he's going to present the play, and if it gets approved, he's going to let Kyle Shanahan name the play. Because if there's ownership in that regard, Mike McDaniel believed that there was a better chance of that call making it onto the call sheet. So who cares what the name is? Everybody would know, everybody internally would know that that's a Mike McDaniel play. And so that dynamic, finding those little leverages and those little minute advantages, even with your own coworkers, I think paints this picture of what it really is like to work on that side of things and to exist on that side of things, especially when combined with the fact that these guys are and always have been wholly obsessive in their pursuit of the ultimate goal of becoming a head coach, and starting to all realize as well what that toll is and what it costs to stay at that level.
Man, fascinating stuff. We have to let you go, Jordan, but I want you to be able to tell, if you have 10 seconds of what to watch in Rams camp, really quick, but more seconds. Importantly, generous. 10 seconds, but then where can everybody find the play callers to hear all of this?
Yeah, my best advice for anyone paying attention to Rams camp is to go download and print out a roster, because there are 40 rookies on this team. So that is certainly what I'm watching for better and probably for worse. That is what I'm watching with this Rams team this year. Matthew Stafford's healthy. Cooper Kupp is back. So those are the two key engines that make it go. And then also you guys can find the Play Callers podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, but you can go through Apple, Spotify, the Athletic Football Show podcast feed. You can find it pinned to the top of my Twitter page, and leave us a review. All 5 episodes are downloadable at once, so you can binge it if you want. And guys, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks Absolutely. So much for doing it.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. We'll do it again and sometime. Enjoy camp and go Puka Nacua. He's the guy.
Oh, yeah. Big praise from Puka Nacua from whispers among the coaching staff. So keep an eye on him as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right.
That was great.
Yeah, it was good. So Jordan Rodrigue, beat reporter essentially for the Los Angeles Rams for The Athletic, and creator of the Play Callers podcast series, which is on The Athletic's podcast feed. So The Athletic Football Show, you know, your regular feed for them, you'll find the Play Callers in a little block of 5 episodes that you can download. Really fun. Like, I pretty much binged it. I listened to the first episode and then had a little bit of a break, and then once we got Jordan locked in for the show, I had to finish the last 4 episodes. But I thought there was some fascinating stuff in there. The Mike McDaniel thing definitely jumped out. Like, there is a Machiavellian streak to McDaniel that isn't there for the other guys that does come across. He was the one guy that I found myself sort of wishing was a little bit of a bigger part of the entire series overall.
That's what McDaniel's done over the last couple of years, though. Right? Like, you had this sense, like, that... in classic PFF form, let's take a 20-minute conversation and now.
Oh yeah, have now we expand.
Let's have an hour and a half discussion about it. There's a lot. When they were talking about getting a play call on the sheet, I'm reminded of a baseball thing.
Of course,
we'll get to it. But we talked off air a little bit. You're like, McDaniel is, you know, he was making a name for himself. You could see that, and I'm fascinated because we caught this at the time, 2021 season. They're halfway through the year, and all of a sudden, Mike McDaniel starts doing press conferences.
Right.
He had never done press conferences.
So he mentions
he was the offensive coordinator.
Right. He mentions that in the series, and he says, so it was Kyle's idea for him to start doing the conferences, but then he was talking about how he wanted to make sure it wasn't like any other press conference.
Yep, right. He's
now, he claims,
dropping rapper lyrics and doing different things every time.
Like, he claimed it was, you know, just because regular press conferences from people bore the crap out of him, and he just didn't want to do that. Now, you can also make the case that, look, for a guy that's already articulated several sort of Machiavellian schemes for other things, this also had the effect of, like, skyrocketing his profile league-wide and making him into a, you know, an interesting name, and, you know, had benefits other than simply not boring the crap out of himself while he's doing these press conferences. So I'm not saying that necessarily had an ulterior motive, but, you know, one existed if he identified it.
The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. We can get them in now.
No, nice, nice. There were a few things in the series,
hold on,
I think.
One more thing on getting the play call.
Uh-huh.
Like, isn't that kind of relatable to just any person in a job who wants to get noticed by their boss or just wants to have approval?
Yeah.
Isn't that it's just like an interesting human nature dynamic where but the football equivalent of it was get a play on the play sheet.
I mean, they
for us, it's like, you know, have a positive meeting or, you know, whatever it might be.
Well, not even just that, but they also connected it to that concept of ownership, you know, and I forget who it was that was speaking at the time, but they were talking about how, you know, you feel more invested in it if you have a direct piece of it. Like, if you get a play in that week's game plan let alone get a call during the game, but if you just get a play on the play sheet for that week, like, you're invested in that more than any given week where you've just been part of helping everybody, but it's somebody else, you know, everyone else. Like, that connection, the direct tie between you and the thing overall is huge in all walks of life. Like, that's why corporations give out stock options. You know, it's what, like, you having that tangible ownership over something, even if it's only nominal in nature, is key psychologically. And there's a bunch of, like, psychological things in this. Like, when myself and Trevor were talking about that quarterback documentary, you know, and it came up again that you only focus on the negatives. Like, you don't remember the wins, you don't remember the highs, you don't remember the big good things that happened to you, but you remember with insane accuracy the bad beats or the negatives or the biggest losses. And Andrew Whitworth is talking about in this, like, he's describing blow by blow the walk back through, like, the campus at LSU after a bad game that they lost. Like, barely remembers, you know, big game, big wins or whatever, but can remember, like, the walk back through whatever, the courtyard or whatever after a loss. Like, it is endlessly fascinating to me how much the human brain focuses on negatives. And we had an email, I forget who was coming through, but after we talked to Trev about why, you know, that might be a way that your brain is wired. It was essentially putting it back to, like, you know, 50,000 years ago in the development of humanity. Like, if you failed to catch a wildebeest or whatever, you died. So it's important that you remember the negatives, right? I don't know that I buy that entirely, because remembering how you caught the wildebeest is pretty important as well. Like, I'm not sure that would explain the what seems like a wildly disproportionate focus of your brain on the negative outcome as opposed to the positive one. But it was just another example of that coming up again, of these guys so focused in on the negative. McVay losing the Super Bowl is a way bigger part of this than the win, right? And Kyle Shanahan now with, you know, what happened to him, 28-3, et cetera. Like, it's such a huge part of these guys' existence.
The McVay, we talked about it a ton at the time. It's amazing. I mean, that 2018 season doesn't feel like it was that long ago. We're what, five years away,
right?
5 years ago. But we talked about that at the time, right? That there was that game, Sunday Night Football, Bears Rams, where the Bears were playing a ton of quarters. It was, you know, Staley's on Vic Fangio's staff. Fangio has this great Bears defense, and they shut down the Rams offense. And then it's fascinating to me that that happens in, say, week 14, 15, whatever that was, and they were still having issues with that throughout the rest of the season. Like, you couldn't just go back to the drawing board on Monday morning and say, okay, how are we going to solve this? It might take time. And then the answer eventually became McVay hiring Brandon Staley and saying, like, we're going to have this competitive, you know, training camp, basically, going up against this defense. That stuff I think
part of that, why it takes so long, is, and you know, you hear a bit about this in the show. Robert Saleh talks about it. Shanahan talks about it. But, like, everything is so stretched thin and stressed as it is, that what you're trying to do is kind of move something slightly out of place so that you can attack the gap, the hole that you just created, right? But it's a small one. It's at the NFL level, we are talking about one false step. Boom, gap, hit it, exploit it, you know?
Yeah.
So when you find something that counters what was working, or, you know, is an answer to whatever is happening, you can't just go, well, let's just fix that. Let's do the thing that counters that thing, because now because it's all this complicated balancing act of, like, this house of cards. If you move one thing, everything else collapses, right? So Saleh talks about this. There was one game where they were playing McVay's offense, and McVay hit them with, like, a million bootlegs in the first half. Like, more in the first half of the game than you normally see in a season. And they were destroying them. And Shanahan's, like, getting on the headset going, would you, like, fucking do something about this?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I can't just, like, start calling unsound defenses. Like, I could take away the bootleg and open up the middle of the field. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? So it took him until halftime to go in and then, like, on the whiteboard, sketch out some sort of half-ass fix to this, and then spend the next week trying to do it properly. But everything is so, like, balanced as it is, you can't just, you know, swing all of your attention over here, because it opens up four other things that they can attack, which is the whole point of that, right? It's, let's make them overcommit to something and then hit them with the counter. Like, that fascinating chess battle, I think, is really interesting and comes up repeatedly, of just how high level things are already working. Like, everybody's got seven's plate spinning in the air, and if you can make them focus on one of them, that's a win. That's the victory.
If you haven't heard already, Sam, it's Smooth Sack Summer.
Yeah?
When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you're escaped from pubes to bum, is what they say. That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming are making sure that we all have a ball this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into Smooth Sack Summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code PFF. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, it has everything you need to prepare for that summer bod. They have built the ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Their new Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe trademark technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention the trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, doesn't matter. This razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts with their Performance Package 4.0. It's the Manscaped Boxers and Shed Travel Bag. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. It's manscaped.com. Smooth Sack Summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind. That's like the ad read that people make fun of, the awkward ad read that someone's making on the podcast.
Yeah?
It's like a meme one.
Huh.
How awkward can you make it?
Strange you didn't read that out while Jordan was on the show.
Well, we timed this up. We timed this up to hit right in the middle here. That stuff's really interesting to me. Is the I don't know if that's the exact game, but McVay versus Shanahan.
Yeah,
there were games where the Rams against the 49ers, like 2019, where when the defensive line was incredible for the Niners, it felt like every pass play for the Rams was either boot or a screen.
Right.
I mean, like 20 out of 22. Where it was these extreme levels, and that's actually what I love about all of these matchups. These guys know each other so well But yeah, Kyle Shanahan has evolved his scheme completely differently the way McVay has, LaFleur, Zach Taylor. Like, they're all different now. But they all end up matching up against each other, right? So the core foundation is there, and then the games are going to be won and lost on the edges. Like, what new stuff, what new adjustments have you made over these last couple of years since we were all teammates and best buds and working together? What adjustments have you made to separate yourself? And that's what we're seeing across the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, this is effectively the story of the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree, right? It is kind of the overarching story of this whole thing. And that's, in a way, the most fascinating part of the whole thing, is you start to hear that thing that you've talked about all the time about how important it is mixing offense and defense, and not just taking a guy who's an offensive mind and letting him run the offense and leaving the defense to somebody else. Like, the whole, like, the making of Kyle Shanahan appears to have been when he basically taught himself or went out of his way to learn the defensive side of the ball and match that with the offensive part of his upbringing from Mike Shanahan's system and all that kind of thing. And you know, we've heard that before in the past now. Obviously, like, Matt Patricia is the kind of cautionary tale to that. But Bobby Slowick was a defensive-minded guy before Kyle Shanahan moved him to the offensive side, and now he's the offensive coordinator in Houston. Like, you talked before when PFF Zach, when Zach Robinson worked here, that he was one of the best people you've ever heard talk about how to attack a quarterback from the defensive side. Like, he would make a great defensive coordinator, because as a quarterback, he understands, like, what's problematic and how to best cause them problems. So this joining of that sounds like the kind of the making of Kyle Shanahan and where the source of his real genius is. And then you hear it with him, you hear it with McVay, how they go out of their way to find defensive systems that cause problems, or that they, you know, like, Shanahan sort of speaks about how when he was hired by Dan Quinn, right, to be the offensive coordinator at Atlanta, and then he kind of gets the up-close look of that Seattle scheme. And he, before that, thought that they ran a ton of quarters. I was like, wait, we're really just running three high the whole time? And they're like, yeah, like, that's the defense. And that, like, one of those great inflection points that Jordan talks about was that game where Shanahan's offense ran up against that Seattle defense and knew the rules, you know, and right, just tore it a new asshole, so to speak. And that's the start of the decline of that defense, really, and this pivot towards the Vic Fangio type defenses. But that whole dynamic is interesting. And then the other way that that becomes evident throughout this show is, I was trying to think back, what would you say that the sort of last one of these hyper successful coaching trees to start, you know, proliferating throughout the NFL was the West Coast offense,
Bill Walsh.
And then that, for a while, most of the NFL was some form of, you could trace them back to Bill Walsh, right? Like, all these guys, even guys you wouldn't necessarily think of, you're like, oh, crap. In fact, this is technically this is part of the Bill Walsh coaching tree, right? Shanahan was under Bill Walsh at some point. So this whole thing, theoretically, branches back to the Bill Walsh West Coast offense. But anyway, I was trying to remember if that Bill Walsh coaching tree was, generally speaking, as successful as this one seems to have been, and I think it probably was.
It depends on... it all goes back to Bill Walsh, because right, it's got the West Coast foundation, but I think Jordan, they highlight early in the podcast series, there's a break between West Coast and then West Coast plus
right,
the zone run-blocking offense.
But one of the characteristics of this current Kyle Shanahan coaching tree is that they're all winning. I mean, obviously you got Kyle Shanahan going to these championship games. Sean McVay's won his Super Bowl. Zach Taylor has the Bengals knocking on the door, you know, year after year. Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota just won 11 games his first time, or 13 games. How many did they win? 13? His first time off the bat, 11 one-score games. They're all winning. Like, they're all doing a good job. And one of the sort of hypotheses suggested, Kevin Demoff articulates this really well, is they all adapt. Like, they don't just come with the system that they've learned under McVay or under Shanahan and go, right, let's go. Here's what we're running. Therefore, we win, because the system's a cheat code, that thing we always say about Shanahan. But the reason it remains successful is that each one of these guys has shown a propensity to adapt the system to their players. Zach Taylor has modified the offense for Joe Burrow. Matt LaFleur modified the offense with Aaron Rodgers there. They don't just take what they want. And McVay, ended up running like a completely different personnel package than he anticipated running when he first went to the Rams. They've all shown this ability to adapt, and Demoff articulates it really well of, like, if you're just coming up with a system and you don't adapt, you've got a couple of year shelf span, or shelf life in the NFL before the league figures you out and you're done.
Yeah, so if you said, the let's call it the Shanahan tree, whether you started at Mike or Kyle.
Right.
Probably starts at Mike because they all worked under him. The common thread is that ability to adapt. If you were looking at, so what was a failed coaching tree? Probably the Belichick coaching tree. There's a lot of people came through the Patriots system. So my quick theory on that, what are the things that wouldn't work elsewhere coming out of New England? Well, first off, there's no Tom Brady. And so that's interesting about like the Walsh tree is they had Montana and they had Young. So they did have the elite quarterback, but they also had elite system to combine that. There's no Tom Brady when Patriots coaches leave. But also, didn't it seem like all the Patriots coaches that left, Charlie Weiss and Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, was the common thread that they tried to bring Bill's personality and control to the equation rather than the adaptability? Again, I'm oversimplifying here, but you hear McVay and all these guys have done different things. But you had Josh McDaniels as like a 30-year-old trying to come in and act like Bill Belichick running the whole show in Denver years ago. And it's like, well, that's not the thing to bring from Bill Belichick that's going to win in other places.
That probably,
because you can't replicate that.
Yeah, that probably doesn't help. I've always felt that the problem with the Belichick coaching tree is that the Belichick system is that it's almost characterized by adaptability on a week-to-week basis. And the problem is that doesn't really give you a framework to bring with you. I think the reason the Shanahan offense works is that there's at least a structure to bring. And then you figure out how to modify it for the personnel that you have and change it to what you want to do. But you are bringing something as a foundational piece to build upon. I don't know what you bring from the Belichick scheme to like start with, right? The whole thing is almost constructed as an ethos of week to week, we're going to change and modify on a game to game basis. And that, I think, it sort of leaves them with nothing to bring with them. Like, it feels like this sort of just, you try and bring a big handful of sand and it's just running through your fingers, whereas at least there's something tangible to take with you when you're going with the Shanahan scheme. But that like ability and desire of all these guys to want to adapt their scheme to their players, I think, is hugely important and one of the biggest reasons for their success.
You want to get in on the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster? Sick of player injuries ending your season? Well, with Best Ball on DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball on DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you could join DraftKings' largest Best Ball contest ever and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer expires. To start playing best ball, you download the DraftKings app, use the code PFF, enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest, and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, no trades, no, I should have played him instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So, what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with the code PFF and start playing best ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament and you'll get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars. Only on DraftKings with the code PFF. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Ends August 9th, 2023.
I do believe that it's impossible to get through that terms and conditions section without stumbling once. Yeah, I've had some really clean takes, but there's always a hiccup.
Age and eligibility restrictions apply.
See, I get that one okay because I focus on it, but there's always a hiccup somewhere else. You can't get through it cleanly. Yeah. It's impossible.
It's like good old-fashioned hate. Between the hedges.
Between the hedges and the peach state.
And the peach state.
Yeah.
So many inside jokes that we have in our off-camera interactions.
That's
that
a deep cut.
We need to bring to the people.
Yeah.
Interesting comment in the YouTube comments here. We do read those. We do keep track. Where it says, someone says, Mike Vrabel is the only successful coach from the Belichick tree. And I wouldn't call Mike Vrabel from the Belichick tree. He's merely a player that played for Bill Belichick. He never coached under Belichick, right?
No.
He's not actually from the Bill Belichick coaching tree.
He went to Ohio State, right, as a coach?
Yeah, he's the Urban Meyer coaching tree.
It's Urban Meyer coaching tree.
Is Urban Meyer's NFL tree better than his seed?
Bill Belichick's.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Now, you went somewhere else. I was going, are Urban Meyer's branches better than the trunk? But
the trunk.
But you're saying, is Urban Meyer's tree actually better than...
I'm not saying. I'm simply asking the question.
We could be a podcast topic.
By the way, we think all the time about... Like, everyone's seen the graphic of that Washington coaching staff where it's got Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, blah, blah, blah. I never realized before it was sort of articulated in the play callers how insane the 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers coaching staff was. Like, all of these guys were there as, like, QC coaches, which... Don't even read, like, it's impossible to find basically who the QC coaches. They don't even register, like, as notable things worth recording. But, like, just looking at the coaching team from that 2002 group, obviously Gruden is the head coach. On that coaching staff, Joe Barry was coaching linebackers. Jeremy Bates was an offensive QC coach. Rich Bisaccia, the special teams. We've got, I'm not going to read them all, but Jay Gruden was on there, Rod Marinelli, Raheem Morris. Mike Tomlin was coaching DBs, and that's before you get to Kyle Shanahan is busy as a QC coach, just like doing scut work in the background, and all these guys under him. It's that Tampa Bay roster as a coaching group may have been one of the most insane groups to have been assembled.
For our listeners who don't know, the quality control coach, which is a pretty cool title, it is the not the lowest job maybe on the coaching staff, but it's the grunt work.
Yes.
It is the absolute grunt work. Like, you're going in and you're saying, what defensive front? Like, the offensive quality control coach is going through and saying, what defensive fronts does the opponent run? What coverages do they run? When? And they're just basically like PFF data collectors. And that's actually a big place where PFF helps. Like, we'll do like the first pass of that and say, here are their coverages, here are their defensive fronts. And then the QC coach will have to go in and put it into their own terminology or say, hey, you call this cover three, but you know, we have like 12 variations of cover three. We name them these ways. And all that data gets, you know, pushed up the chain so that the actual coaches who make decisions can do something with it. So quality control is really just a data collector, essentially, right, at the NFL level. It's just just for those who don't exactly know. But that's where you really learn a ton, right? You watch probably more football than anybody. And you learn, and that's how you pick up stuff along the way, and that's the work that's needed to kind of move up to the, you know, next spots in the coaching pecking order.
Yeah. One other thing that was mentioned in the show, something we've witnessed firsthand, but they mentioned that, like, Aaron Donald effectively gets given veteran days off, not because Aaron Donald needs veteran days off, but because the offense needs days where he simply isn't practicing so that they can actually function.
So they can play.
Yeah. Like, genuinely, he ruins practices so much that they have to give him days off so they can actually run a practice where the offense can move the ball or work in any meaningful way. Which, I mean, we saw that, like, when the Rams practiced Cincinnati for those 2 days before he launched somebody's helmet at their own head. Donald ruins every drill, every single drill. It's like, this is, you can't run the drill because Donald is in the backfield one-on-one in a second. Like, unless you are doing what every team does in the regular season and, like, changing the game plan so that you're blocking him with more people than are, like, drawn up to be on this play, he ruins the play. Which I think, you know, if you go back to this, like, oh, is Donald really the best player in the NFL? Is Chris Jones better, et cetera? Like, you need to remember that kind of attention that he's getting. And if you actually treated him like a normal human and let him have one-on-ones ever, he will ruin the game for you.
Be over.
Ruin the game. Like, watch practice and you will see what would happen if Aaron Donald was not given that kind of psychotic attention on a weekly basis. He's still the best player out there.
I think it's also a reminder from a team building and player personnel standpoint to say, well, Aaron Donald's a game wrecker, therefore get yourself one of those guys. It's like, well, no. That might not exist.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not just, it's not putting any three technique out there. It's putting this Hall of Fame level guy that literally can't get blocked one-on-one. Like, yeah. He's not going to lose one-on-one.
Right. Good luck finding that guy.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to touch on is, I kind of mentioned a little bit in the interview, but we have to, in the media, oversimplify things when we talk, oh, this is the Shanahan tree, this is the scheme, and you just assume everybody's going to be the same guy. Like, Bobby Slowick's Kyle Shanahan's apprentice.
Right.
Therefore, all the plays are going to look the same, personality is going to be the same, but everything's different, right? And some of those changes through the years. In 2019, when the Niners started running more gap scheme, and Jordan mentioned this, that was a huge part of that Super Bowl run. Because remember the history there. If you guys are on YouTube right now, on YouTube, go check out, search Alex Gibbs outside zone. If you're really into the nerdy X's and O's of football and you don't completely understand the history there. There's a 5-hour clinic of Alex Gibbs. He was the offensive line coach for Mike Shanahan. There's like a 5-hour clinic on YouTube where he is at the University of Florida during the early Tebow days. And he is teaching Florida the outside zone scheme. He's teaching them all the mechanics of it. And the Cliff Notes version of all that is, if you're going to commit to this offense, this is all you run. You know, Alex Gibbs loved outside zone so much, he's basically like, don't even, this is it, just master this. This is your run game. You'll have one inside zone, you'll run a little inside zone, but that's it. You're not doing much else. You're not running power, you're not running counter, you're not doing this stuff because you don't have the practice time. You have to master this. It's a completely different way of teaching offensive line play. And so it's just a fascinating discussion, and Alex Gibbs is, the clips that he's showing are from Michael Vick and Warwick Dunn and how they're just solving problems from a schematic standpoint. And so that's like what the Shanahans did. They ran outside zone. And then Kyle got RG3 and it was like, oh, now I've got the QB as a run option there. And but they still ran outside zone, outside zone, outside zone. But then they evolved their run game in 2019 on that Super Bowl run. They started running more gap stuff. Again, they hinted at that. Mike McDaniel probably got a couple of those plays in. But that was one way the Shanahans moved on. The Pete Carroll coaching tree that only ran cover three, right? We chart all this stuff. There are seasons where the old school Seattle Seahawks would run 70% cover three. And, you know, it's different variations of it, but it's pretty much single high cover three. And a lot of the coaches on that tree kept doing that. Like when Gus Bradley goes somewhere else, he leads the league in cover three. But Robert Saleh did move to play more quarters and change things a little bit, right? So my point in all this is I think sometimes we all oversimplify and just think, well, this guy worked for that guy, so everything's going to look exactly the same. But the more and more you hear from the good coaches, they have that foundation, they have that base, but they put their own spin, they put their own tweaks on things. Even Raheem Morris coming in and taking over Brandon Staley's defense with the Rams. Raheem Morris was supposed to be Tampa 2 guy, but that's not what he runs. He doesn't just run Tampa 2 or the same system. He runs a variation of what Staley did and his own tweaks on it.
And so much of it seems to be, like, Kyle Shanahan comes out of this as the mastermind. You know, like, McVay was the guy who people weren't scrambling around trying to find Shanahan assistants or disciples. They were going after McVay was the punchline, like, oh, have you met Sean McVay? You're hired. Yeah. Like that kind of thing, right? It wasn't Shanahan. But coming out of this, Shanahan comes across as like the source of the spring, like the font of the knowledge. The Morris, as a Tampa 2 guy, was developed and moved on because of the battles, you know, with those guys on the offensive side of the ball and the adaptation that he had to do because of that. And, you know, Robert Saleh as well, going back and forth with Shanahan was what evolved his system and brought in all the quarters and the wide nine and all this kind of stuff. So, like, it is fascinating. You hear this all the time. Like, why does everyone talk about Shanahan as if he's this god? Like, listening to that series, I think, will give you a lot of insight as to why people talk about Kyle Shanahan the way they do. He really does come across as the guy that knows the most, like more than any of these other guys, even in this room of geniuses. Like, he's the genius that stands out.
I mean, that's why.
Yeah,
that's why a couple shows ago we said Kyle Shanahan's had more consistency, and we clarified, I know I clarified by saying, not if you just look at win-loss record. I think he's been bitten by the injury bug at quarterback. Right. When Kyle has had his quarterback, he's won at an incredible rate and gone to NFC championships. And then even when he had Brock Purdy, not his quarterback, went to NFC championships or Super Bowls. So that's where I think Kyle has been, is the guy that I would take over McVay. In addition to like what you're saying, he's the godfather of this tree.
And then the interesting thing becomes, what's next, right? Because this is an arms race.
Yeah.
The offense shows up, it's unstoppable. Defense finds a way of countering it. Offense evolves again. Now what's the next step? Like, we're in this world where everybody's looking for that Brandon Staley defense, but these offenses have found counters to that. They're causing that defense problems again. So what's the next step going to be? One of the voices that was in the show that I think we should probably have on at some point to talk about that is Chris Brown, you know, Smart Football, literally wrote the book called Smart Football.
Yeah, Chris is great. He did it. His blog back in like 07, 08, just really good, easy reading on just what's happening
right
in NFL and college football schematically.
I think he'd be a really good person to talk to about what he thinks, you know, is going to be the next evolution of either side of the ball. None of those coaches wanted to talk about it,
of course,
obviously, right? Andrew Whitworth kind of gave his take. RG3 gave his. But it's even within this little arc of just, what, 10 years, you hear them talk about, like, when they first started doing this stuff, it's like NFL defenses had no earthly idea how to stop it. So they just deployed cover three all day, which is what you do when you don't have any idea what the hell you're looking at. Like, oh, just the most vanilla safe coverage we have. So Shanahan was like, well, that first year we just saw cover three all the time and we're basically unstoppable if that's all you're going to throw at us. And then, you know, defenses have figured it out. Like, the difference between that 10 years ago and what is happening now, where he's had to evolve and add, you know, man concepts into a zone scheme and all this kind of stuff, we're so far ahead of where we were a decade ago, and now we're waiting for the next thing, like the next step of evolution and all that kind of thing. It's really interesting, and a look behind the curtain in terms of like how that chess battle works.
Do you want to get Smart Football on here?
Yeah.
Find out what's next?
I think we should.
I want to know what the people think. I asked yesterday if you'd be interested in mid-season, preseason draft content so that Sam has to grind draft film before March. So
March.
January.
Yeah.
It's January.
So right.
I want you to grind draft film going into the offseason. But would people be interested in us simply reading training camp reports straight from Twitter?
Oh, God.
And reacting in real time. Like right now?
No.
Wouldn't that be fun?
No. Though I do, I feel kind of jealous of Jets fans that are watching Garrett Wilson go one-on-one with Sauce every day. That
so
looks
good.
Pretty fun from the videos that are being thrown out at the moment.
Rich Samini, nice play by Zach Wilson. Climbs in the pocket to escape pressure and zips a seam for a completion. Hashtag Jets.
This must be quite a pressure-free year for Zach Wilson now.
Oh, he's going to play free.
You got nothing, no expectations. Nobody even remembers you exist. You're just the guy in the background while Aaron Rodgers does what he does.
Come on, man. This is fun. This is new. Like, this is great. I say this every year right around last week of July, but the NFL for me, saying like the late 90s, early 2000s, this time of year, you didn't get these training camp reports. I don't think at this level of, certainly not in real time.
Right.
But you'd get like a day after report. Hey, look, who looked good, who didn't look good. But this is where the NFL would put their NFL yearbook shows out there. You'd get the 30-minute positive recap of the previous season. And that was kind of, for me, those were all over ESPN and everything. And it'd be like, hey, reminder, football's coming back soon. And then the preseason would start and then the season. But now, forget NFL yearbook. It's like, there's new news. Because Darren Waller is uncoverable right now. First three plays in 11-on-11, all passes to Darren Waller, wide open over the middle. He's unstoppable. Darren Waller is going to have 150 catches.
Yeah. No,
he's going to change that offense.
This is the great priors, you know, confirming your prior season. That's late July, early August. It's confirming prior season. Anything you thought, you'll find a training camp highlight video to support that. And you can run with whatever narrative you wanted to talk about from now until the season starts, and we get to realize and understand that actually almost nothing you saw had any real relevance to what's going to take place.
Spaceman QC in the chat, who might be a quality control coach
possible
for the Spaceman. He asked if PFF registers cover six as cover three. And it's, no, we have a separate cover six and cover three breakdown. Cover six is quarter, half, right? You got cover two on one side, cover four quarters on the other side. We call that cover six. We have different cover six variations. We got cloud. We cover cloud and everything, which is probably too much. But we do separate that from
well, that's the thing with all this stuff, right, is there's because of this arms race of sophistication, it's not as simple as it used to be, where teams would legitimately kind of stick to the five broad buckets or whatever, and you could lump almost every single coverage into the fairly vanilla, as it's drawn on a whiteboard type of coverage. Now, almost all of these coverages have some kind of like cross, the lines are blurred between each one, right? And there's, you can argue now that this coverage is technically this, but actually has a lot of assignments and responsibilities are exactly the same as this. And, you know, how do you separate those two, or where do you draw the line, et cetera, et cetera. So,
and for us, we purposely have to like oversimplify it. We're not trying to,
we're not trying
to make like an intricate cover six call. But it is interesting that back in the day, the Seattle cover three, people thought that was kind of quarters, even though it's because the safeties are offset.
Right.
You used to have the safety completely in the middle of the field. You got his fist, right? Completely in the middle of the field, right? And then you started strong safeties here, free safeties there. There's some quarters elements to it, but they're at different depths. They have cover three responsibilities. But all defensive coaches were trying to do is to what you're basically trying to do is steal extra coverage while still being sound in the run game. And that's like the cat and mouse game. You have to make sure the run game's covered while stealing extra space from a coverage standpoint. And that's how coverages evolve. And that's how you get the Seattle cover three. And that's how you get more quarters looks with different variations, because you're trying to cover everything while also trying to make sure that the run game is sound as well.
Yep.
You have nothing else to say here today, huh?
No. It's time to wrap.
I'm just rambling about stuff.
I know, yeah. Well, you're excited to be back on the show now.
I am excited.
I can't shut you up.
I've had all sorts of, you know, just been sitting on takes and football discussions. I'm excited reading. Give me one more. I need one more thing. Oh, I can't believe you don't want to play this game.
What game?
Jonathan Mingo. All caps. Full layout. Diving catch down the sideline from Bryce Young. Fun to watch.
Well, I'll
from the Panthers beat.
I'll retweet that one. There. Are you happy?
You found it?
Not yet, but I will.
Terrace Marshall looks hashtag fast on a crossing route completion with Bryce Young, who starts 11 on 11 with a 4-for-4 line. Bryce Young, Hall of Fame career, off to a good start.
Yeah.
All right.
Can we end this podcast?
Okay, one last thing. DJ Reed breaks
up. Video of this?
No, I'm just reading the reports. DJ Reed breaks up a sideline pass to Garrett Wilson, but a pretty dramatic mood change follows as Wilson limps off toward trainers.
Well, way to ruin the podcast. End it on a down note.
That's all I got. I follow the NFL beat writers report. They just retweet all the stuff. It's great.
You run the risk of expanding your jinx reach by doing this.
At the moment, reading. We've
only identified one player that you have a definite ability to jinx. What if you've discovered several more?
It could happen. All right, that's it. We appreciate everybody for tuning in, and we appreciate Jordan Rodriguez being a part of the show. Go check out the Play Callers. Was it five? Four or five part
five.
Series? Five-part podcast series on the Shanahan tree, and also all sorts of good nuggets in there. If you are a football nerd, like I know all of our listeners are, I think you're going to love it. So go check that out. That it? Now you're ready to go?
Yeah.
Happy birthday again.
Are you back on Monday? You still on the show, or are you leaving
again? We'll see.
Okay.
Now I'll be back on Monday, and then we'll go to camp on Tuesday.
Oh yeah.
Go see Anthony Richardson and the athletes that the Colts drafted.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Monday with more PFF NFL podcast.